Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Run As Well podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
Wow, and me, Ben Hobson.
It's all about being surprised by your own name.
Oh, well done.
Yeah. Anyway, it's me and Ben. Today we're speaking with Sam Murphy about how to run your best marathon.
I'm going to say, you know, legend.
Legend of the marathon.
Legend of the game.
Yeah, true.
A former columnist for the mag.
Yep.
Long term, like a 10-year stint.
Yeah. You get less for murder, don't you?
Incredible. Sam's an absolute knowledge. So this is a good one in terms of all of you out there who are taking on the marathon, be it brand new or experienced, but looking for a bit more insight. This is for everyone. This isn't just like, oh, it's January, let's try and get some beginners over the start line. This is everything. I was picking up new tips today, and I was particularly like the base phase.
Yeah, absolutely. Base phase. And there's some surprising stuff in there, isn't there? That I think that...
Base phase and mileage early doors.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Which was very interesting. In your marathon experience, which is vastly greater than mine, what have you found that's worked for you training? What was the sort of... Have you got any hot takes? Any life hacks when it comes
nice.
To...
Oh, nice. Yeah, so I agree with Sam that putting too much emphasis on a long run that is increasing the whole time... For me, I think I've got quite a large injury risk, particularly with like lots of longer running.
Yeah.
So I did quite a lot of quality, probably more quality than a lot of people would do. So, and I think my longest run was probably only about, might have been 18 miles. I might have done that twice. But having said that, I was going into that marathon fit. So I was starting that training block where I was like, I'd done quite a lot of cross country stuff. I got close to 3 hours before wanting to break 3 hours. So I felt like I was getting closer, and I didn't need to pull out anything magical on the day. It was just kind of like I'd done some hard racing, quite a lot of quality work, and I think taking some of the emphasis off the long run and including maybe a bit more speed than some people might think isn't the worst way to approach it.
And I think that part of this is all about... Anyone can do a marathon. That's a proven fact, I would say, by just looking at, you know, the people who enter in the fields that complete it. But I think from a performance point of view, it's all about discovering the method that works best for you.
Definitely.
And I think that's what, you know, this method, which Sam talks through, might not actually work for a couple of people.
Yeah, totally.
Given, you know, some people might thrive just by gym work and lots of quality,
and they'll
get around just doing it that way. But it's definitely a really, really interesting conversation we have here about different approach.
Yeah, I think so, and it's backed up by decades of experience and science.
She's tried it. Sam's been through the. She's, you know, any methods of possible whatever approaches.
Yeah, yeah.
She's like, this is, you know, a few years ago. She talks about this one being this way or this one being way.
Yeah,
it's an assimilation of decades of knowledge and stuff like that.
Yeah, so. I think it's a really good plan to be thinking about, and it's all in her book, isn't it?
She's got a great book.
How to Run Your Best Marathon.
Yeah.
How is your own running going, Ben? You've got a few races in the diary. What's going on?
Well, yeah, true. I do have a race in the diary still. It's still in there. I haven't rubbed it out yet. It's cold. I quite like running in the cold.
Yeah, I don't mind either. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. Well, that tick that
of
one
all
off.
The activities, all the sporting activities, ours is the best when it comes to cold.
Yeah, agreed. Apart from like snow sports.
Yeah. But in terms of warming yourself up, I haven't got that much time for the it's too cold to run argument. If I'm honest.
Like it.
If I'm honest.
When and if do you wear leggings?
I mean, I have worn them But it's, I feel like
you don't like go, right, it's under 5 degrees.
No.
I will now just wear work.
And that's just me. But like, I think there's a case of wearing them if you were like out on the trails. Do you know what I mean? Kind of like exposed environments, mm-hmm. like might be out for hours. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't put them on for like, you know, the 30 minute easy run. But each to their own.
I would.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's cold.
Because it's cold.
What about you? How's your running?
Yeah, it's all right. I've signed up for the... so I'm doing the Canterbury 10 miler this month.
Mm-hmm.
And then doing the Orion 15.
Yeah.
A classic of the genre.
It is a classic of the genre. So 15 miles of mud around Epping Forest.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I've been going for many years and I've kind of had my eye on it and thought, oh, that's a great race. That's a good old school race. I'd like to have a go at it. And a mate of mine, Brendan, signed me up. So going to take part.
Well, I mean, it's my neck of the woods, mate. I'll come... Either cheer you on or I could join you, I suppose.
Yeah, either one.
Either one. Right, should we get Sam on?
Let's do it. Guest of the week, here in the studio. Guest of the week, sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete, could be a physio, or a complete unknown. Our guest this week is a hugely respected author and runner whose latest book, Run Your Best Marathon, looks at the art and science of mastering the 26.2-mile distance. Sam Murphy, welcome back to the Runners World podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for coming back on. Obviously, it's kind of marathon time, isn't it? A lot of people are thinking about that. They've probably signed up for a spring marathon, perhaps.
Yes.
You know, wisely, hopefully. and are maybe looking for some expert advice. We thought, who better than we'll get you on to talk about marathon training, because obviously it's your latest book's all about that. So could we start with... before you begin a marathon plan, do you think that you should be able to tick off certain things from a fitness perspective? Do you think you should go into a marathon plan like having never run, or would ideally you already be able to run a certain distance before entering a marathon plan, in your opinion?
Yeah, well, in my opinion, I know it doesn't always make me very popular, but I do think that it's important that you have got probably the sort of half marathon distance under your belt, because there's a really good reason for that. If you haven't run more than sort of 7 or 8 miles or perhaps even less than that before, you're going to spend so much of that marathon build up, you know, gradually trying to add on 1 or 2 miles every week to get up to the point where, you know, you're going to reach your longest ever distance that you've ever run. You know, maybe it's 18 miles or 20 miles and that's going to be maybe 3 weeks before you're going to run the longest race you've ever run in your life. And to sort of, you know, weigh everything up to that end, push every, you know, challenge up to that sort of final point of the training just before the race just seems to be, you know, a recipe for disaster from my perspective. So I think it's really important that, I'm not talking about having to, you know, run a fantastic half marathon, but I think that for you to be able to go out and run 12, 13 miles and do so, whatever the pace is, but to do so sort of reasonably comfortably so you don't literally have to sort of take to your bed for 3 or 4 days afterwards is a really good place to begin your marathon training. So you've already got a good base of endurance on which you're going to build in that first phase of training.
Before we get into the base as well, I mean, I guess that sort of sense of fitness and that means that you'll probably enjoy it a bit more rather than and I'm not sure, Sam, if you can tell us, but the people you coach, I mean, the experience of a completely like zero to marathon versus like mildly experienced runner through to marathon is probably a much more enjoyable experience.
Yeah, and there's no need to rush the process. I think there is, you know, it's great that so many people want to take on the marathon now, but you know, we shouldn't be elitist about it and think that other race distances don't hold their own merits. You know, I think I was reading something by Steve Magnus, who's one of my favourite coaches, the other day, who was saying, you know, we shouldn't even sniff at the 5K. Yeah. You know, it takes a lot of good training and focus to run a good 5K. And we shouldn't just always think that the bigger the distance, you know, the harder the challenge or the better the challenge or whatever. So, you know, taking time to build up to running a good half marathon is going to not only set you in really, really good stead for a good marathon, but it's also a good achievement in itself. And I think you'll go into the marathon training with a lot more confidence if you know that you have, you know, aced the half marathon.
You've really, like, Rick's face lit up then. Rick's favourite like sort of enters a room and asks a question standpoint is, what's harder, training for a training to complete a marathon or to run your fastest 5K ever?
Oh, it's definitely the latter. Sam will agree with me on that.
Well, that's obviously what you've achieved recently. No,
I wish that, but I agree with you. I think we tend to emphasize distance and think that distance is the thing you've got to aim for, whereas actually speed, whatever speed means to you, is actually just as hard and just as worthy.
But the base.
Yes, let's talk about the base.
Yes.
I thought you were going to do a little baseline.
No.
Then. No. Okay, we can put that in as the edit. We often hear about building a base. So in terms of when you're talking about marathon training plans, what does building a base, what are some of the elements that includes?
So really the base is about volume. So it's about the amount of running that you're doing. So we're totally not interested in intensity at this point. We're just thinking about, you know, how many miles can we comfortably and sensibly include in the training week. So obviously the best way to maximize that is to run those miles at a really easy, comfortable pace. So you don't want to be challenging yourself in terms of you know, how hard the runs feel. It's got to really be about trying to build the length of the runs, but also the number of runs, so that you're kind of building up to you're close to the maximum weekly distance that you're going to run throughout your marathon training. So this is actually an approach that I only really took on probably over the last 5 years. You know, I sort of followed the accepted wisdom of you know, building up to your longest run, say, you know, up to maybe 4 weeks before the race. But you know, when I kind of came across this other approach, it did really seem to make sense to me, the idea that, you know, why would you leave your longest runs at the sort of back end of the program when you're going to be right on top of the race itself, and to actually try to get to the point where you're going to be able to reach that distance much sooner in the plan. So you've already ticked off, you know, an 18 or a 20 mile run much earlier in the game, and you can then back off from that, focus on some other things, come back, revisit that long distance again, maybe add a little bit more on, back off again, you know, focus on some lactate threshold and some other types of training, and then come back and hit that again. So you are going to hit it a number of times throughout the overall marathon program, but it's not about doing, you know, 16 and 18 and 20 and then 21 and, you know, week after week of these like ever building runs, which is much more likely to leave you, you know, fatigued, but also is going to increase your risk of injury. So keeping that sort of initial build up to the base phase of the program, so you are building distance, but you're not also throwing in intensity as well.
It's very interesting, like actually. That. Yeah, me too. Because I think that's probably a large part of what people find daunting about a marathon plan is that they look to like weeks. If you're doing a 12-week, 16-week plan, they look to week 10 or whatever, and they go, "Oh God, I've got to run," as you say, 18 miles, 21 miles, or these big long Sundays. And accumulative effect is quite like, oh, I've got, this is going to be exhausting. Whereas if you remove all that pressure and just sort of like, as you say, I mean, it's still fairly daunting early doors in a plan to have distance, but to absolutely, like, it's not about any other work. It's not about intensity. This is purely a mileage kind of thing. It really...
Exactly. And it does sort of tie in with that first point about whether you need to be at a certain stage before you take on a plan. And, you know, in my book, I have gone down that road of saying, you know, I know you might want to throw the book across the room, but I want you to be able to do 12 or 13 miles and not just have done it once so you can tick the box, but to be comfortable running that distance before you start. So then when you get to, say, 16 miles 3 or 4 weeks in, you can do it. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to feel effortless or easy, but you can do it. So then when you've got to, you know, 18 or 20 miles, you don't have to just, you know, keep on building or, oh, you know, the race is in 3 weeks' time. You can take some time away from that, focus on some of the other aspects of fitness that we need to work on to run a good marathon, and then keep coming back to that longer distance. So you're not going to lose the fitness that you've gained from doing those longer runs, but you're also not just going to pound into it every single week and need to keep on going up and up and up. And I think that's the thing that, you know, people are often so fixated on their long run And, you know, they kind of come to a training session in the week and they're sort of limping or, oh, I can't really run any speed tonight because this is hurting and I've got to do my 20-mile run on Sunday. Yeah. And you're like, well, if it's hurting now, you know, you really don't want to be thinking about doing your 20-mile run. And but it's such a sort of sacred thing to get all of those long runs and not miss any of them. And I think people really do believe that if they miss a long run, you know, that it's going to cause a massive, you know, impact on their overall training program. And the truth is, you know, we're all going to miss runs through a build up to marathon. It's just, that's just the way life is. And, you know, we're not elite athletes living the life of, you know, with a whole team of support people coming to feed us and massage us.
There's no midday napping, is there?
No.
One of the surprising elements, I think, for people, and I think that you subscribe to this, and I believe this is a Steve Magnus thing as well, but it's talking about a speed base. Sam, can you talk about that? Because I think for some people, the idea of a speed base will be new or seem a little bit counterintuitive, I think.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Yeah, exactly. No, I really was excited by the idea of the speed base. So just as, you know, the base training is, you know, traditionally we're thinking about, you know, running very sort of slow and easy, and that we're building, you know, like the base of a pyramid, really. And then on top of that, we'll build more intense runs, which will be shorter, and we're getting more intense and shorter as you go up the intensity sort of scale. So the speed base is really kind of working almost the other way around. So when we're looking at doing kind of VO2 max training, you know, the typical sort of track intervals or you know, two-minute intervals that we might be running, you know, at VO2 max pace, going for, you know, real sort of near maximal effort, that we're sort of going into that without really having any sort of having touched on any pure speed. So where we're really, really focusing on those type two muscle fibers, which are your real sort of anaerobic sprint fibers, really. Right. And so the great thing about combining the speed base with the endurance base is that although the effort is very, very high, I mean, it's maximal effort really to do 8-10 second sprinting, but it's not really very exhausting on the body because it's so short. You might have noticed that, you know, when you sprint sort of for 10 seconds and you don't have that same sort of breathing that you would have if you just run a 5K, because it's working a totally different energy system. Yeah. And so why would you do that? Well, using those the muscle fibers that are engaged when you're doing maximal work is really like kind of recruiting a team of temps who you might not need now, but there's going to be times during your running where you are going to need those temps to come in from the agency and help you out because you're a bit overworked in the type one endurance fibers department. So you're like, okay, we need to call in the temp team. And the temp team have already done some training, so they're kind of ready to come in. And this muscle, this fiber cycling, you know, when one muscle fiber's tired, that another one can come in and take over. this really comes into its own during very prolonged exercise like marathon running. So you're in a way, you're building your team to call upon when times get hard. And you're also going to be able to use those sprint qualities that you've built up in other little aspects, like trying to surge past somebody, maybe if it's on a narrow course, or get to
the last 10 yards,
the finish line, just before that clock turns to a different time, you know. So we can combine the speed base by doing very, very small amounts of very, very high intensity work, which are not going to fatigue your body in the same way that you would be fatiguing your body if you were doing more traditional sort of longer duration speed work.
I like that.
It's good, isn't it? It's a hack. It's a little bit of a hack.
It's kind of the same. And also it reminded me, Sam, actually of a podcast that we did a while back, which was talking about the benefits of doing some sprinting for things like bone density.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's one
for people to listen back to if they haven't to. But it was, you know, you're not just benefiting your marathon performance here. You're doing some good for the bones as well and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and I think it also just adds something. It's variety. Mm. You know, when you're doing those like long, easy runs, you know, it's not challenging in terms of pace. But to have a session where you're doing those little hill sprints, or they gradually progress to flat sprints, it's just a totally different challenge, and that's quite mentally refreshing as well as physically refreshing and really valuable.
And the sprint sort of brings us nicely into strength work, because there's a bit of, obviously with some hill sprints, very hard efforts, you can kind of replicate a bit of strength work with those sorts of things. But there obviously would need to be, I mean, some sort of gym-based perhaps strength conditioning work like that. Where does that fit in with you and your idea of sort of running your best marathon?
Yeah, I think strength work is really important for, you know, every level of marathon runner. You know, it's injury prevention is probably the biggest reason, but also performance improvement. I think starting with the injury prevention side of things, so for people who don't do any strength work at all, I would keep the first, while you're doing the base phase, I would keep it to quite a sort of low intensity strength training. So in the book, I've got a kind of foundation program. So it's really just about using your own body weight to improve core stability and balance and just sort of general strength and mobility. So it's quite a sort of generalized and simple program to follow. But if somebody's already doing strength training, then they don't need to sort of go back to that. They'll already be more accustomed, and they can include some strength training. So yeah, I'm not really a big fan of the kind of, oh, I'm going to be using my legs over and over again, so I'm going to do hundreds of reps with a really low weight. I mean, the science doesn't really support that as being the most beneficial way to strength train, even for marathon runners. So we're really looking at doing, I suppose it's quite the traditional format of strength training, you know, two or three sets of, you know, somewhere between 8 and 12 reps, so that when you're getting to those last couple of reps, that it feels really, really difficult, but you can get to that sort of level. And then resting between sets, you might want to go and do another exercise to be more time productive rather than just sitting and waiting for the time to pass before you get on to the next one. So I really recommend doing strength training. I've included some plyometric exercises. So plyometrics, for anyone who doesn't know, you know that we're making use of the stretch shortening cycle. So that sort of elastic energy that comes from the tendons lengthening, and that's been shown to be really beneficial to running performance. But again, it is quite high. It's quite a high intensity, quite demanding type of training. So I would keep that to a time when you're, you know, when you're a little bit more accustomed to strength training. I wouldn't go straight into doing that, recommending in the sort of early days. Particularly, I think the good way to think about it, I don't know if we're going to talk about sort of kind of slightly external factors like nutrition and recovery and stuff. I don't know if we'll have time to talk about those today. But I do sometimes talk about this stress pot. You know, you've got a pot and the stresses that go in that. include, you know, your life stress. So it might be, you know, your job. It might be, you know, sort of commuting, getting around. It might be family stresses. And then your training is also a stress, you know, even though you might enjoy it some of the time, it is still a stress on the body. And so as you've added this stress of training, you've got to kind of think about what, you know, what else, you know, something's got to give at some point. So unless you're going to be able to up the other side of the weighing scales, if you like, you know, and actually work harder on your nutrition, on your recovery practices, on getting enough sleep and all those sorts of things, then you're going to have to think, well, what stress can I not add? Because I'm going to have this training stress at the moment. So it gives you a good way of thinking about what, you know, what to add and what not to add. So, you know, you might think, well, this is, you know, I'm doing this training, I'm doing a bit of strength and conditioning, and I've heard that the plyometrics is really great. Maybe I should start doing that as well. Well, just think about whether this is the right time to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean. It's almost an endless amount of stuff that you, in a perfect world, you could do. If we looked at like the next phase, which I think we're going to call the development phase. So we've done some base work. The development phase, we're looking to build both endurance and speed, I guess. What role would something like lactate threshold running? Can you give us a definition of what that is and why lots of people, I think yourself included, think that that's particularly relevant to marathon training?
Yeah. So lactate threshold, the lactate threshold itself is the point where your muscles are not able to clear the lactate that naturally accumulates as you work at an increasingly hard intensity of exercise. So your body is always producing lactate, like all the time. Even as we sit here now, we're producing lactate, but it's just cleared away. You know, it's a very sort of relaxed process. And then as you get to higher intensities of exercise, that lactate starts to collect in the muscles more. And at some point you'll reach a point where the little people with the brooms aren't clearing it out fast enough from the muscles. I do like to have these little visualizations people doing these little jobs around my body. And so it starts to collect, and that creates a very acidic environment, which hampers the way muscles function. And that's what creates those feelings of, you know, sometimes you get a kind of a really breathlessness, sort of extreme breathlessness, where you might hear a little bit of I'm going to do an example now. that kind of, you know, like slightly like tuneful note in the breathing. And you can also feel it in the muscles themselves. So it could feel that they've just gone to jelly, or sometimes it can be the opposite and feel that they've turned almost to concrete, you know, and it's really, really hard to keep moving them at the same rhythm as you were before. So that's the lactate threshold. And so what the research has shown is that if we can train at a point that's just below that level, that helps to nudge the threshold upwards. And that's why it's the most useful form of training for any race that's sort of 30 minutes upwards. Mm. It's one of the most useful types of training that we can do. So typically that will be a pace that is sort of around 10K pace. I mean, one of the definitions people use is that it should be a pace that you could maintain for about an hour in race conditions.
Right, okay.
So if your 10K is nearer to sort of 40, 45 minutes, then it's going to be a little bit slower than your usual 10K pace. But if your 10K is closer to the hour, then it will probably be around the same as your 10K pace. So, but another good way of thinking about it is that it's comfortably hard. So, you know, if you're going to be able to do it for an hour, it's many people do their lactate training just far, far too fast.
Right.
You know, think, could I maintain this for an hour in, you know, it, with the adrenaline of a race and with a bit of focus? And so it should feel hard, but it's comfortably hard. It's not out of control, ragged breathing and all those kinds of things.
Right, that's good.
That's really how it should feel when you're running.
So this is part of a sort of key metric for the development phase. This is where we've taken, what would you say the base phase, Sam? What do you think, like time? Is there a specific time for that? Or is it just more how long you've got?
Do you mean a time frame for the length
of
it?
Yeah, kind of. Is there a real quantifier or you know, where you can go, actually the base phase is definitely done for me, like I've done my distance and I've reached that target? Or is it sort of just a you know,
a feeling inside.
Yeah, I mean, a warm sensation.
Yeah, like, it's not always an ideal world, is it? I think you need to leave sort of 6 to 8 weeks for your base phase. But, you know, if you work backwards from the date of your race and you think, well, I've got, I don't know, 12 weeks until the race, well, you're not going to be able to give 8 weeks to the base phase because you haven't got time to do that and still allow other things in there. So you might have to sort of shorten that a little bit. But so in the programs in my book, the first timers always get 8 weeks for the base phase, just to spread out that build up of those long runs a little bit more. And the experienced runners get 6 weeks.
Right, okay.
But I think that's, you know, another thing I talk about a lot is about bringing yourself into the equation in the book. You know, this idea that you can't just kind of go and pluck a sub 330 program off the shelf and then expect if you follow it, everything's going to just turn out at 329. You know, that's just not how it works, because you have to think about what you're bringing to it, your experience, your previous experience of marathons, your fitness level, your injury propensity, how much time you've got to train, what your, you know, your mental focus is like. All of those things are going to kind of come into that. And you might be somebody who responds to training very quickly, sees improvements very quickly. You might be someone who takes a bit longer. And so the more you get to know about yourself as a runner, the more you can put that information into adapting any plan to better suit your own personal and unique needs.
Yeah, that's great. Mm. And then so when the base is finished, we're into this development phase, lactate threshold, we're working out what's hard now in terms of what the sort of metabolic and I guess anaerobic changes that need to be made by the body in terms of more effort. And how that gets...
Yeah, well, we're still aerobic. Right. We're still aerobic in lactate threshold. I mean, all the training that we're doing, we're still going to stay aerobic, apart from that stuff in the base phase when we're doing that maximal sort of sprint work. And we do revisit that a little bit just to kind of, you know, keep your hand in, really. Just keep those muscle fibres...
happy.
Responsive.
Keep the temp workers going.
Yeah. Keep on a retainer. Nice.
So I'm aware that we've also got a part two.
This is a two-parter.
So we'll have to leave people on a great kind of cliffhanger, Ben.
Tune in for the next episode to find out about your development phase.
To find out exactly what time you'll run for a marathon.
Yeah.
To the very second.
What's the final phase?
It's the specific phase, Ben.
Right. So we're going to do... So episode two is more development. Specifics
exactly,
and then we can talk maybe about the recovery that Sam mentioned as well.
Exactly, there's so much. Don't miss it.
Oh my god,
next week,
episode two. I'm excited.
Okay,
ooh,
so we've left it on a cliffhanger. What
Huge
happens in the developmental phase that's coming up,
and the specific phase?
Oh my god,
you're gonna have to listen next week, everyone. This is what we do now. We're just masters of suspense.
That's it. Who did it? Was it the pacemaker? So we've got you've got Sam back next week to talk about the sort of second half of marathon training. So if you like this one, tune in next week, and thanks very much for listening.
You can subscribe to 3 issues of Runner's World for just £5. Go to runnersworld.com/UK/podcast offer to get this exclusive listener offer. It's a brand new year, 2024, people. Why not get a whole year's subscription to Runner's World? I think that sounds like a great way to start your year, and maybe a mate's. Subscribe for a mate. It's not that much money. Just get them the magazine too. Then you can have like a magazine club and you all sit around together and read it. Like a book club, but just for magazine. Just for Runner's World magazine. So it's actually a fantastic franchise. We should get onto that. Tell the people to do that. Thank you for listening. You'll hear from us next week, which will be the second part of this episode. So God, it's actually really, really good idea. All right, bye.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.